Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and welcome to an hour of mind power. Well, for those of you who are curious about history, if you have had an interest in metaphysics, if you are intrigued by understanding where things come from, you're going to want to know about a fascinating woman. Her name is Frances Yates. This is about the Hermetic tradition that was established centuries ago, and my guest is Marjorie G. Jones. Marjorie, welcome to the show.
I'm delighted to be here, Donna. Thank you for inviting me.
Marjorie, I have to tell you something. I didn't have any idea about Frances Yates and what this woman had accomplished. And I want to compliment you on your book because by just going by the material you had acquired, you have put together an unbelievable amount of information. This woman, who was world-renowned as a scholar, born in 1899, died in her 80s. Her life story is so interesting. How in the world did you ever discover this lady?
Oh, it's a long story that I'll try to not have absorbed the entire half hour. I'm so pleased that you've read your book, and I'm so pleased that you and hopefully others will become familiar with Frances Yates, because I think she's such an important woman, and her work has certainly changed and influenced my life. It's really my own spiritual journey that led me to Frances Yates.
Marjorie, something happened to your phone line. There was a click.
Oh, I didn't hear it.
Okay, I did. So, just speak up a little louder, hun, because your voice is sort of faint, and I don't know what clicked or what happened on the phone line, but it was there.
Okay, I'll try. We have a rainy day here, so I don't know if that's a factor.
Okay.
As I said, it was really my own spiritual journey that led me to Frances Yates. I think it's relevant that I come from a mixed Jewish-Catholic tradition. So I have always, one parent was Jewish and one parent was Catholic, and I've always tried to reconcile those because I treasure and value my heritage. And so reading my way through a spiritual tempest of sorts, and at the risk of being trite, a midlife career crisis, I returned to school to pursue a master's degree in history. I'm a lawyer by early training, and I was always a very restless lawyer. Some of us call ourselves recovering lawyers.
I like that one.
Have you heard that? There are a lot of us.
Recovering attorneys. Okay.
Isn't that great? And among the books I read, it was in my 40s. I'm now about to turn 68. Among the books I read that meant a lot to me were The Hero with a Thousand Faces by Joseph Campbell.
Okay.
And also the extraordinary series that Bill Moyers did with Campbell before he died.
Mm-hmm.
And Campbell, reading A Hero with a Thousand Faces, Campbell turned me on to, I don't know if it was Hermeticism per se, but this idea of a universal myth. And in one of his books, he mentioned Frances Yates. This is all in hindsight, Donna. Another book where her name turned up was one of my favorite biographies. I've always loved biographies of women. In fact, I just donated about at least 500 to my alma mater, Wheaton College in Massachusetts, was Octavio Paz's wonderful, extraordinary biography of Sor Juana de la Cruz, the 16th century nun who was one of my heroes in Mexico. And he mentioned Frances Yates. So I got myself to graduate school at the New School in New York City while I was working. And they allowed me to pursue my master's one degree at a time. And one of the early assignments was to write a paper about the work of any given historian. And I approached my advisor at the time, who was Eric Hobsbawm, the great British historian. And I said, you know, I've been reading a lot about this woman named Frances Yates. And he said, he's British, and he said, oh, Frances Yates, well, then you'll have to go to the Warburg Institute. And I said, what's the Warburg Institute? And my husband and I had a yard sale to pay for the tickets, and I went to London. And you don't just walk into the Warburg Institute, which is an extraordinary library of Renaissance literature. You have to get permission, which I did. And I met Yates' literary executor, a crusty old guy named Joe Trapp, who's since died. And he wasn't, I think I always say I was Trapp's worst nightmare. I'm not a scholar, and I'm American, and I'm a woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lethal combination to British scholars. And anyway, the first couple of days I was there, Trapp said to me, listen, we have two of Yates' trunks in the basement, family trunks. Are you interested in looking at them? And I said, sure. And the rest, as I say in my book, the rest, as they say, is history.
Well, it's fascinating to me that it was so timely for you. As you said, you were a middle-aged woman, you were American, you were not a scholar, and yet they opened this door of opportunity for you, and you worked on this for 10 years.
At least. When I could.
Yeah, when you could. And to me, to be that consistent and to be that persistent and going through all of these papers with this woman born on the cusp of the new century, born in 1899, to a Victorian environment where women didn't really have any rights, where they were supposed to be these little mousy characters, all pretty and picture perfect, but you weren't even considered to have any brains most of the time because you were female.
Yeah.
So, as I'm being a little sarcastic, yes,
no,
I am.
I
just, you know, I look at this, and here is this individual. Now, she never married.
No. None of the siblings did, Donna. The only son, it's a tragic story. The only son, as you know from reading the book, was killed in World War I.
Yes, and that was a travesty to the whole family.
Yes, and it's also, I mean, a lot has been written about this generation of British women and European women, these families devastated. There's some other wonderful women, Dorothy Sayers and Vera Brittain, who had the same experience. It's a pattern, of course, coming out of World War I, which interests me enormously. But there were three sisters, and none of the sisters married, so there were no descendants. And as I began to go through this, she had her wits about her till the very end, but she was, yeah, Frances did, but she was so busy on her scholarly work, although she began to think about a biography, an autobiography, she never got around to finishing it. Parts of her autobiography are published at the end of one of her posthumous volumes of essays. But as I began to go through these papers, she left notes for her biographer saying, this would be good, or this should be included in the biography. So she left instructions, and one of the young students at the Warburg who made copies for me would say, who do you think she was talking to? And I'd say, she was talking to us.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt, I mean, the risk of being pompous, I felt a kind of sense of mission. Somebody had to tell her story.
Mm-hmm.
And the Warburg wasn't too interested. It's a very Dickensian kind of place. It's really like stepping into the 19th century. They didn't seem too interested. And part of it may have been because in some circles, even at the Warburg, she was considered a little off base because her theories were so different from traditional theories of the Renaissance. So I felt a kind of mission, because I also feel strongly, as you appear to as well, about telling women's history, that somebody had to tell her story.
I think it's absolutely amazing. And one of the points that you brought out in your book which, and I'd like to go into a little bit of how she ended up getting into a college, because her basic education was very much unorthodox.
Really?
And what you said about Frances Yate is that she was ahead of the pack, using your exact words, by nearly a half a century, and she decided on her own that she was going to explore and understand the Hermetic tradition, because it had a thought patterning to it that she really liked, but she didn't understand it because of the world she had come up through. And when she did submit her manuscript, it was rejected by Cambridge University Press.
Yeah.
And they wrote to her in 1938, and this is just amazing. And every woman that has ever tried to go through their glass ceiling, whatever it might be,
yeah,
in their particular environment will really relate to this. It's this Edgar Wind, who was the deputy director of the Warburg Institute, which you have just been talking about, suggested that the reason for the rejection was that it undermines, quote, undermines some of the most cherished ideas, and it is certain that conservative scholars will find it their duty to disavow it as long as they possibly can.
It's amazing,
She was correct about what she wrote, and her observations were so far ahead of her time. We still have this same garbage going on today.
Well, students, oh, yes, it's really a story of courage, I think. And students today, if don't get me started, if they know any history, we're taught, if they know any history of the Renaissance, I taught a class last night, and I was just appalled at how little college students, at least where I teach, seem to know about history, but that's another story. But if they're taught about the Renaissance today, or as we were taught about the Renaissance, it's all about secularism and humanism. And I think that's taught still, because it's the formula, as Wind suggested. But she said, no, much more spiritually, along spiritual lines, was going on in the Renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, and I think maybe still is, very threatening to Oxbridge and to traditional scholars.
It's a fascinating period to live in, because today we as women have, since the 1920s in this country, have had the opportunity to advance in education, to be able to have rights and choose what we accept, what we don't want. And here is Frances Yate, coming up from the late Victorian period, breaking through all kinds of boundaries. Tell us about her education, and how did she manage to get into college when she didn't go through the traditional educational process?
Isn't it amazing? Well, I don't know the, it's an amazing story, but I don't know the requirements for the University of London where she finally got her degrees, but she largely was educated at home by her mother, who was not a scholar. And because I'm interested in gender history, I think one of the givens about her education is that if she had been born male, she would not have been educated at home. Her only brother was sent off to boarding school, as young British men are, and off to Oxford. But she was educated at home by her mother, and I think it's significant to her story that she came 11 years after the three older siblings. And so I sense that she was kind of kept at home to keep her mother company,
mm-hmm,
which, again, wouldn't have happened to a male child. And her mother, I think, was not educated. I mean, she was I think my sense is, because there's virtually no written record from her mother, a very stern and domineering woman, and certainly not a scholar. But Frances talked about this. She was educated. For example, she was allowed to read any novel she wanted, and she was taught to write, and I think she's just an exquisite writer. She was taught to write, I love this, by copying passages from great novels such as Vanity Fair. And to the end of her life, she could recite long passages from Vanity Fair. So she was allowed this wide range of reading. And I also think we cannot overestimate how extraordinarily bright she was. I mean, Frances Yates had read or seen every Shakespeare play that I've never even heard of by the time she was 13 or 14. That teenage diary, that adolescent diary that she left, and which, by the way, has not even been photocopied by the Warburg, is really, I think, a terribly important document in her story and in the story of women in the pre-war and war years in London. But she would write, these are the plays I've seen or have read of Shakespeare. These are the novels that I read this week, and these are the ones I'm going to read next week. She was extraordinarily bright. And she later in life, as you know, said her very unorthodox education was, quote, a marvelous good fortune that doesn't happen to children today. But I think the combination of the free-ranging reading, the wide range of reading, with, there is no doubt in my mind, an extraordinary intellect, created this great scholar. And by the time she finally did get around to getting a degree, I'm sure they just let her in. I don't even know if there were entrance exams to the University of London. And she went as a commuter or day student. She did, if you'll recall, she did as a young teenager at the urging of her older sister, Hannah, who was a novelist, a published novelist, and one of the first female students at Girton. She did sit for the entrance exams to Oxbridge, and she failed them. She didn't fail them. She didn't do well enough to get in. And she said it was because she didn't seem to care, and she said it was because she was too busy reading novels.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, I just, again, to repeat myself, I don't think we can overestimate her intellect.
Now, let's talk about the Hermetic tradition.
Okay, good.
Because this goes back centuries and centuries.
Yes. Yes.
And if I'm not mistaken, and please correct me if I am wrong, basically Hermes, which was recognized in mythology as a god, also equated with Mercury,
yes,
but there was a Hermes Trismegistus,
yes,
out of Egypt.
Yes.
And it was related to the Egyptian god Thoth. Am I right?
Yes.
All right. So the Hermetic tradition, when she came across materials relating to this, it was as if she had an aha. It took her into a whole different level of thought. Why do you think that this was such an adventure for her to be able to do this research and to write about this and really shock all the conservatives?
Yeah. Keep in mind, I am not a scholar. I always, whenever I talk about Francis Shades, and especially when I talk about the Hermetic tradition, and especially when I talk about the Renaissance, the caveat is I am not a Hermetic. I am not a scholar. But my own take on it is that her theory, coupled with this wonderful imagination, superior intellect, and wide-ranging reading, that her theory of the Hermetic tradition and her idea to place Giordano Bruno within the context of the Hermetic tradition had a lot to do with her spiritual journey. The family was devastated by the war. She was a deeply spiritual person. And I think, to her mind, the Hermetic tradition, when she finally figured out what was going on with Bruno, and you can't, I think we have to mention Bruno here, who, if he's mentioned at all in classrooms, is thought to be a great champion of the Copernican theory of heliocentricity, which he was. And he was burned by the Inquisition in 1600 in the Campo dei Fiori in Rome, and there's a wonderful statue of him there. And it's always thought he was burned because he advocated the theory of heliocentricity. And what her breakthrough was no, it wasn't because of that. It was because he left a really vast body of teachings and writings, and she couldn't figure them out. She came upon them in that early translation she made that you mentioned of the La Cena de la Cenere, which was rejected by Cambridge. She read it, and I think she was interested in it because the Hermetic tradition, which is so different from the patriarchal Judeo-Christian tradition, spoke to her. And until one day in her 30s, she was caring for her father, and she was walking on the boardwalk, and she said, as you said, aha, he wasn't Bruno wasn't martyred because of Copernicanism. He was martyred because of this Hermetic tradition, because it is non-creedal. The church of the 1600s would not tolerate it. And she even questioned toward the end of her life whether Bruno was even a Trinitarian or even a Christian. He was, as you know, a Catholic priest. So when she put him in, Bruno, in that context of this Hermetic tradition, which is based on our relationship, humankind's relationship with the cosmos, which is very appealing to me, relationship with the cosmos and how we're not outside the cosmos and we are a part of it. And when she placed Bruno in that context, to her, and I think to most everyone else, Bruno's writings and teachings began to make sense. A lot of people had written about Bruno, several women as a matter of fact, and a lot of people had written about him, but no one really ever figured him out until Yeats. And it's very, she's been denigrated, one, I think, because she's a female, and one, because she wasn't trained at Oxbridge. But Joe Trapp, this executor I mentioned, gave a very insightful lecture about her after he died, and she said, people say that accuse Francis Yeats of seeing Hermeticism everywhere, and he said, beware, because if you discard the theories of Francis Yeats, you have not understood the history of the Renaissance.
And one of the marvelous aspects of the Renaissance, with much of what she researched, was the understanding that the Hermetic tradition was centuries old before she even discovered it.
Oh, yeah.
And it had been around. And what is so interesting is that when you think about our world today, we're coming full circle, because part of the Hermetic understanding was the relationship of the mind, the body,
yes,
and its relationship to physical environment, etc.,
and
that disease often was caused by this, you know, by an imbalance.
Right.
So a lot of what's being discussed today in the world of health, which for so many generations it was just considered sacrilegious to do it.
Crazy.
That you would have been considered crazy. And now they're beginning to understand the mind-body connection.
Yes.
And all of this, here she is, of a generation that were as closed-minded as anyone could be, unless you belong to a group of some kind where you had fellow students. But Frances Yeats was an amazing woman because she pursued her extreme interest in spite of everything that went on around her. And I just have to compliment her, because apparently the way she was raised, the isolationism that she learned to enjoy, the fact that she had to take care of the family and was in charge of so much as her mother grew older, all of this had such an impact. She had a concentration that to me is just amazing.
Oh, yes, she was. Really, her work product, I mean, it's just enormous. And what I take comfort in, among the things I take comfort in, although I would never compare myself to her, is that her most productive years were her 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. You know, but I along that point of where we're coming today, this is my personal feeling on the relevance of the Hermetic tradition. It's non-creedal. So she uncovered, and others have too, that there were Hermetic Christians, there were Hermetic Jews, and there were Hermetic Muslims. Now, Bruno was preaching this business in the 1500s when the wars of religion were beginning to explode in Europe, where Protestant Christians were killing Catholic Christians. So this message that transcended creed spoke to Bruno, and I think it spoke to Frances Yeats in her century when European nations killed millions of each other.
Right.
And I think, I mean, it's the risk of pontificating, I think it speaks to us. I mean, here we are today in a terrible culture clash, and I think in one of the great ironies of history and one of the great tragedies of history, one of those buses that was blown up in London was blown up right outside the door of the Warburg Institute. So lives were taken at the door of the Warburg Institute in the name of religious fanaticism.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that day that the buses blew up, I called my dear friend, the archivist at the Warburg, and I said, "Are you okay?" And she said, I didn't call her, I emailed her, and she said, "We're locked in." And I thought, how ironic that this doctrine that I think is relevant as we're in the, you know, we are in this terrible time in history of culture clash. I mean, if you didn't know better, you'd think we were fighting the Crusades again. That this doctrine, which is deeply spiritual, it's a, as I define it really simply, it's a synthesis of mysticism, Gnosticism, which is self-knowledge and awareness, and magic, which we see, oh, magic. But magic is a really precursor of science.
Mm-hmm.
The word alchemy leads to chemistry. So I think this doctrine is relevant today. And it could be, I'm not naive, I don't think it'll happen anytime soon, but this idea that there is a spiritual message that transcends creed is very appealing to me.
I have here in front of me the book, and I just want to share something that you put in here that was written by Frances Yates, because she was very critical of a particular writer by the name of Sir Oliver Lodge. And she said, "For many centuries, the world was dominated by the Aristotelian philosophy, a tradition handed down from generation to generation, based largely upon ancient writings, which in the course of time acquired a sort of infallible authority. An age of heretics such as Roger Bacon, Francis Bacon, Galileo, a direct appeal to experiment, a clarion that each individual could make observations and determine truth for himself, with the implied further claim that if experience ran counter to fundamental tradition, then it was tradition that must give way. The new method of arriving at truth conquered in the end, and in due time attained a kind of orthodoxy and supreme authority under the splendid reign of Sir Isaac Newton.
Uh-huh.
But in our own time, a new heresy has arisen, a kind of modernism which calls this orthodoxy in question. The indestructibility of matter, which was the fundamental basis of chemistry, is no longer believed in. What is the result? First, an enlargement of the universe beyond all previous conception. Next, the detection of law and order running through the whole. Humanity is stretching its powers to the uttermost. It is, I believe, unconsciously preparing the way for a perception of spiritual truth which has not yet fully dawned on the scientific horizon."
Mm.
And, you know, you think this, you know, this was written by her, and I think you're bringing it out in the book, is so profound because today we're talking quantum physics.
Yeah.
Today we're having scientists talk about multiple dimensions.
Yeah.
Today we talk about parallel universes. It's not Star Trek stuff anymore.
No,
it's not Jules Verne's time machine. This is here. This is now. This woman was incredibly ahead of her time.
I'm delighted. But, you know, I think, again, not as a scholar, but I think her critics, her scholarly critics, overlook. I don't think people, and you obviously have, but what I was really, really hoping in the biography was that people would come to understand the importance of her own spiritual journey on her scholarship. And that quote mentioned Newton. She was moving into the 17th century as she just ran out of time.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite book of hers, by the way, is the Rosicrucian Enlightenment, where she follows the Hermetic tradition onto the continent. But few people realize, she has led me to Isaac Newton. Few people realize how deeply spiritual Newton was. I don't think he was a traditional Christian. But when Newton figured out these laws of nature, he said, "God exists,
mm-hmm.
because only God could put this into motion." And Newton spent much more time in his career on alchemy, which is also very misunderstood. It's not about, I'm sure there were charlatans who were trying to turn lead into gold or something. But what really alchemists, the spiritual alchemists like Newton, and I think Yates, were interested in was the process of transformation.
Mm-hmm.
Of spiritual transformation. And, gee, aren't we all interested, all of us who are on a spiritual journey, aren't we all interested in that?
No question about that. This great lady died on September the 29th. What was it, 1980?
81.
1981, she passed away. What a wonderful gift you have given the world by your writing and bringing forth her story, because I think that you have honored her in a wonderful way. I appreciate having the opportunity to become aware of her, because she was a great woman. And she was a woman of a time when women weren't supposed to be scholars, when that was a no-no.
It wasn't easy.
No. Now, do you have a website regarding Frances Yates, or is
there? I have a website regarding me.
Okay, and what is that?
Yeah, it's Marjorie G. Jones, one word, all together. No punctuation. MarjorieGJones.com.
MarjorieGJones.com, and you can find out more about Frances Yates. So many times on this show, I say, if you want to understand yourself, if you want to understand today, it's good to know about history.
Oh, yes.
And Marjorie has done a wonderful job at bringing forth a story of a woman that was so far ahead of her time that people want to forget about her. But Marjorie said, no, we're not going to do that. Marjorie, I want to thank you for your book on Frances Yates and the Hermetic tradition. It's insightful. And I think anybody that wanted to learn more about history would have that gift, but also the gift of finding out about a woman who had tremendous courage and wasn't afraid to be the individual she was.
Thank you so much, Donna. It's been a very stimulating half hour, and I appreciate your interest and comments.
Thank you, Marjorie. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open. If you would like to chat with me, give me a call at 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227 for the U.S. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. We also have a direct line, 530-876-3222. So any of those lines are available. All I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then I will be happy to give you the insights that I perceive, and then after that, you're welcome to ask a question about anybody that you like. Now, quick like a bunny, I do want to run through some information for you. I want to let you know that I am going to be in Alaska next week. All broadcasts will be live from Fairbanks as well as Anchorage. These are the guests that I'm going to have. And by the way, if any of you are listening in from the Alaskan area, then what I would say is no. You can call my office if you want to meet with me privately. I will be available for sessions while I'm up there. You can call me on my office number, which is 800-872-8852. That's 800-872-8852. Here's our guest lineup for next week. We're going to have a love story on Monday. It's titled Unforgettable. Michael Skowronski is my guest. This is his personal journey that is going to be quite phenomenal. Now, I know we've got a caller, so let me take and give this information out quickly before I go to our next caller. Teresa Tapp is going to be with me on Wednesday of next week. Tuesday's going to be an open mic day. So we are going to just have that hour open for anybody and everybody to call in through the entire hour. Teresa, we have got so much to share on Wednesday. It is awesome. We're going to be talking about the upcoming retreat that I am going to actually be able to attend, and we'll be broadcasting from that in October. Then we're going to be talking about the unhappy child, what every parent needs to know. Dr. Kenneth Condrell is going to be my guest, and if you're a creative person and you feel like your fires are sort of on the low flame level, well, we're going to stoke those creative parts of you, and Phil Cousineau is going to be my guest. So we've got a nice group of people next week. Tell your friends, and know you can always go to the archives if you want to catch up with the shows that you have missed right here on BBSRadio.com, Station 1, The Donna Sebo Show. Let's go to our first caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
This is Jackie from the Sierra Nevadas in California.
Sierra Nevadas. Oh, my goodness. I bet you're seeing the changing of colors up there.
It's starting to. It's still a little bit warm right now, but it's quite beautiful as always.
Oh, the Sierras are phenomenal. They are just absolutely phenomenal. Well, Jackie, let's get down to business with you. The very first thing I'm picking up with you is I want you to do your writing. I want you to allow yourself to just put pen to paper, or if you're more comfortable working with a computer, do that. But there's something magical that seems to occur with you when you have a pen in your hand and you're writing the words down on the paper. I know your fingers can't move as quickly, perhaps, as the buttons on your keyboard would. But if you will just do your initial thing and then maybe go to a keyboard, I think you'll have the flow that you want. But there are a number of stories. It's just like I'm watching characters walk right out of your forehead, and they're taking their positioning on paper. And I think also there's an artistic style that you're wanting to incorporate with this written format. I find this quite fascinating. It wouldn't surprise me at all if you ended up having a career as a writer. You are a woman that is breaking with tradition to a degree. You've always been of that genre to a certain extent, but yet in many ways you have a love of the simple, and you have a love of tradition. So you're going to be able to combine all of those very comfortably in the coming years in a career layout that is going to suit your needs. Now, I want you to be aware economically, you need to really mark your P's and Q's. You need to really pay attention to how you want to manage your money, because I'm seeing a steady income of dollars, but I do know that you must be wise. And you must be prudent, because you are going to be wanting to do some traveling and doing some investment in some business that you feel is long-term. So you are going to have to work with a budget, I think, so that you will be comfortable and you'll feel at ease. But I would not be a bit surprised if you end up with a career that involves your writing and communicating ideas, concepts, characterizations to reach people in a very special way. And I encourage you to pursue that in your own time frame and in your own manner, because it is going to be very liberating for you, and you will touch the lives of many individuals, many of whom you will never, ever meet, but who will be very loyal to what you produce because they feel that what you produce has tremendous value. What question do you have for me today?
First, I wanted to say thank you very much, because I do come alive when I write. And I've written on the web and things like that, and I always get wonderful responses back from people. So thank you to remind me that I should really be doing this a lot more often than I do. So.
And you're very fortunate, because in this world today, due to technology, you have access to a lot more resources that may want what you have to offer and will be happy to pay you for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's something to explore. And, you know, one thing I have found is when you get into a creative flow, it's like the universe kind of blesses you and encourages you by dropping the right person at the right place at the right time, and it's like a carpet ride. So I really appreciate that. I just am in a lot of transitions. I have a lot of friends that are ill and relatives that are ill, and just kind of overwhelmed with being supportive of them, at the same time grieving with them, and so I'm kind of in a bittersweet time right now. So
I'd say right. And the reason I say right is that you want to try to capture this bittersweet time. Why? Because it is going to enable you to share with others perceptions that maybe they themselves are not going to be able to vocalize. Mm-hmm. And you, through the written word, will be able to reach them and help them go through that process of healing. And in the writing, you also will go through the process of healing. And something for you to remember, and we're all cognizant of this, we're all recognizing that we're mortal and we're all going to have a particular period of time on this earth, and then we're going to be gone. We're going to be giving up these chassis. Mm-hmm. As a friend of mine used to say, she can't wait to get the new one. Anyway,
right.
You're giving up the chassis because the journey's over in the one that we occupy. So I think that when we have these moments, we realize that life moves on. And that nobody lives forever. Mm-hmm. And the reason that we have this sense of loss is that it creates a void. When there is a very special person, then they're out of our life. They leave us the gifts of what they have given us in that friendship, whether it's a relative or anyone else. It doesn't make any difference. If you've had a good relationship, there's that sense of, gee whiz, there'll never be anybody to take their place. And that's
mm-hmm.
true.
Mm-hmm.
But in that void, you have the opportunity to fill it with something else, with someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And the world is very rich with opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can express that through your writing. And also, you can honor and respect those that person or persons that are leaving this experience, and maybe honoring them by the memory of the gifts that they have left behind, whatever their legacy may be.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you have a way to be able to share that with others so that it can be comforting as they go through their experiences with the journeys of the loved ones that they have.
Thank you. I really resonate with what you're saying. Thank you. How do I handle people who are suffering? How do I support them?
Just
when they're in pain and their bodies are deteriorating and they're emotionally suffering.
Yes, they're suffering. Many times they're very frightened. Pain is a companion that none of us want to join with. But sometimes it's through pain that we have our wake-up call. Sometimes it's through pain that we recognize something's wrong and we have to do something about it. I think the best thing you can do is sympathize. Empathize, but not
sympathize.
And you want to be able to listen, and don't judge them. Don't make it good or bad, because one of the things that you'll find, if you're a good observer, is that many times people just want to say what they want to say. They just want to have an opportunity to talk about it. They don't want anybody to say, oh, you should be thinking purple lambs at this time. That's not logical what you're feeling. Forget this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just be a good listener. And just let them know that you care.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe have some books of humor or some good music. and maybe there's a distraction you want to give them, and maybe they don't want to be distracted. Maybe they really want to feel this entirely,
mm-hmm.
and that's okay, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's a black and white answer for this. I really don't. Having been through the experiences myself and been around others that go through theirs, I find many times it's not getting emotionally involved that helps. It is the empathetic positioning where you understand that the biggest gift you can give them is that of being a good listener. And maybe reading a story to them, maybe listening to a movie,
mm-hmm.
or watching a movie with them, spending time with them, maybe just sending a card saying, I want you to know you're loved and I wish you the best.
Mm-hmm.
Because you cannot fix that pain.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's part of who they are in that moment, in that experience. And I think there's ways of dealing with it. And that's part of the journey, too, is learning what works and what doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to take a break, so I'm out of time at the moment. But thank you for your call.
Oh, thank you very much, Donna. Great, great advice. I appreciate it.
You have a wonderful day now.
You too. Bye-bye.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break, and we're going to be back in just a moment.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-8765-227 or 888-815-9756. I've got quite an interesting schedule these next couple of months. I'm going to be in San Francisco on the 17th, 18th, and 19th of October. And the event that I'm participating in is the Wisdom Festival that's going to be held at Fort Mason in San Francisco. This event is just wonderful. Speakers coming in from around the country, including myself. Also, there are vendors, services, products from all over the world that are going to be there. It's a marvelous opportunity to be able to interact with people of different backgrounds, expertise, and knowledge. And this is a chance for those of you in Northern California and anywhere else, if you want to fly in for the event, go ahead and put it on your calendar now because it's a delight. I'm going to be there. And I will be doing some speaking, as I said, but no, you can go to wisdomfestival.com, wisdomfestival.com, and you can find out all of the information. You'll learn what's happening, the hours, the costs, all kinds of things that would be of interest to you. I hope you'll stop by and say hello at my booth there at the Wisdom Festival, and remember that this is an event that only happens once a year in the San Francisco area, so I do hope you'll come by and participate in this really exciting event. Lots going on, and I'm so pleased to be a part of it this year. Donna Sebo here, 877-8765-227 is the number to call if you're in the U.S., or 888-815-9756 if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. I have two presidential questions for you. Do you know the only vice president to win a Nobel Prize and to also compose a hit song? And who was the only president never to cast a vote in a U.S. election? Does that sort of stump you for a moment? Well, it would have stumped me, but of course, I have the answer in front of me, and I know you don't. Well, Charles Gates Dawes, a vice president during the second term of Calvin Coolidge, he won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1925 for the Dawes Plan, which attempted to reorganize Germany's World War I reparation payments and stabilize German finances. Now, Dawes was an incredibly talented man. He was a flute player, and he also composed classical music. In 1912, he composed Melody in A Major, and in 1951, the year of his death, Carl Seigman wrote words to the Dawes tune, and in 1958, the song, retitled It's All in the Game, was recorded by Tommy Edwards and made it to number one on the pop charts. Dinah Shore, Sammy Kaye, and pianist Carmen Caballero also popularized popularized this tune that Dawes had written so many years before. And the only president that never cast a vote in a U.S. election was Zachary Taylor. He was the 12th president of the United States. Why? He was fighting. That's right. He was involved in various wars in the defense of the U.S., specifically in the War of 1812, in campaigns against the Seminole Indians in Florida, and in Texas's war for independence from Mexico. So that's a little bit of trivia that you can add to your stockpile if that's something that you enjoy. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Well, the other day I had gotten through the first six signs of the zodiac, giving you the fall prediction astrologically. I always have fun with this because this is just something that's sort of lighthearted and just fun information to give out. Now, what if you were born under the sign of Cancer? Well, let's see if we can get some information in this afternoon. In September, if you're born under the sign of Cancer, you've got some vacation possibilities that are coming to you, and it looks like it's going to be fairly close to home. And you may be feeling like you need to get into the home decorating mode, and if so, work with it, because I think you're going to be not only successful, but you're going to be able to do it in a very economical way. October, man, good fortune seems to be smiling on those of you under the sign of Cancer. Your energy is going to be high, and oh boy, you are just going to be so into family, and you may even acquire a new pet. Now, in November, take care of yourself. You will find it's time to be for you. It's time to have quiet time, visit friends. Just be aware that you are preparing yourself while you're in this sort of quiet phase in November to get really ready and going for the holidays. So this is something that is going to be opportune for you even when it comes to your working environment. Now, for those of you born under the sign of Capricorn, yes, for those of you in the month of September, you have got a good month here. You're going to have good opportunity to make money. Reputation is going to precede you in everything that you do, and you're going to find if you want to get yourself physically fit, this is the time to do it, because you are going to find it easy to do. October, well, it sort of starts off a little bit slow in October, but you know what? Take it easy, because you've got enough stuff coming up on your calendar. You don't need to worry about being bored. You're going to be too busy. So enjoy your quiet time while you've got it. And in November, you have got so much opportunity to really get cozy with those special people that mean so much to you. And you're going to give some time to yourself. And I think you're going to have a chance to rejuvenate yourself in a very special way. Well, I know we're running out of time here, and I just want to say we will get to those other four signs, Leo, Virgo, Aquarius, and Pisces, probably next week. And meanwhile, this is Donna Sebo. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Life is so utterly amazing. Expect the best. Expect opportunity to pop up. And don't worry about how it's going to happen. It's amazing. Sometimes we get so busy scheduling and programming that we really forget that if we can let go, let loose, just go with the flow, as the old adage is, be responsible, things fall into place. This is Donna Sebo. We'll see you back here, right here on BBSRadio.com, Station 1, The Donna Sebo Show, on Monday, where we're going to be talking about a very special love story. Donna Sebo here. See you right here, same time, same place. Bye for now.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. 1-800-327-7297. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedros. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.